But I'm, but like, you know, what is she to you?
You know, she's just one of the bitches I got set up. I got mail over in Hermosa Beach, and I rent this little place for Simone over in Compton, where you staying. Mm. And about four blocks away, I got this young 19-year-old country girl named Sharonda. I found her on a bus stop 2 days out of Georgia, barefoot, country as a chicken coop. Took her to my place in Compton, told her it was Hollywood.
You told her? She believed you?
Hell yeah. With her dumb country ass, Compton is Hollywood. Closest she ever been anyway.
Welcome to Cinema Across Modiso, episode 13.
Wow, 13.
Lucky number or unlucky number?
We'll go with lucky.
It's lucky because I'm here.
Yeah, here we go. I'm here with Drewster Cogburn, co-host.
What's up? How's it going?
And special guest Angel Rivera. How's it going, Angel?
I'm good. Thank you for having me, man.
Hey, thanks for coming on, dude. Angel of SBK Live with Kevin, Matt, and Angel. Brand new iteration of SBK Live podcast version, which is... Man, that's the future.
It is. Actually, the fun, and we're too into this. And
yeah.
It's definitely remarkably different and a lot more exciting and fun.
It's
completely different beast and a different way to do it. And so far, it's just been just a lot of fun.
Because for people that don't know, you were a producer, co-host, all that on SBK Live.
Yeah.
5 nights a week, or actually, no, I'm sorry. First off, for 5 years, every Saturday night on Real Radio, on FM station, and then 5 nights a week for like 4 or 5 years after that, right? For a good while.
Yeah.
And then, you know, for stupid political backstage reasons, not for any positive reasons, the show got shit canned because people don't know what good they have, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So now you're not stuck in that structure anymore. You guys can come up with your own thing, and it's
liberating. Liberating as that is, that sometimes it's like also dawning because you're like,
"What do I do?"
Yeah. Well, exactly. There you go.
You have the option to do whatever you want. Now you actually have to pick something to do.
Exactly. Yeah. And so you know, grabbing those concepts and trying to forego structure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
trying to translate what you did before, which had such a rigid structure. Only because of commercials.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Only for monetary reasons did you have such a rigid structure. Now you can fold all that stuff into the show any way you want.
Yep.
You know, the money can, it doesn't have to affect the way you do the breaks and everything. It's totally your...
Pretty awesome.
I love podcasting. I love it so much. Oh, man. Well, I'm so glad also you guys have been able to record the show here from the beginning until we get the big SRN studios up and running. We get front row seat, man.
every Thursday, you know, SBK is live for us.
We get SBK live.
Live.
Yes. Oh man, front row seat. It
is awesome.
So many people on the Twitter and the Facebook and the Instagram are jealous.
It's
fun, and I revel in it. I absolutely do. All right. Well, we're gonna get into episode 13. We got a lot to talk about. First off, I did want to mention the passing of Roger Ebert.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's a bummer. I know we're going to start the show with a bummer, but we'll do this real quick. Got to mention it. Dude was one of pretty much the foremost American film critic, not in terms of really his content, but just the way he did it.
Right.
You know, the layman's terms that he
thumbs
used.
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs up. The Siskel and Ebert, you know, that thumbs up, thumbs down thing revolutionized film criticism. They made it accessible to the average person. So even if you didn't agree, like I heard you say on episode 2, Ebert always had the opposite opinion of you.
He tended not to like the movies I like.
Which happens, absolutely. That I read Ebert all the time, and half the movies, like I'm like, I don't really agree with you, dude. I understand why you have your opinions, and I respect them, but I think you're wrong. But you know, that's opinions, right?
Like he just killed Breaking 2, Electric Boogaloo. slaughtered it.
Really?
Yeah.
The old white guy from Chicago didn't get Breaking 2? That's strange. Man, I think that'd be right up his alley. Yeah, it's all about the audience, you know. But sometimes, though, he was also able to look past, like, know that he's not part of a target audience and still appreciate something for what it was.
Because actually, I think he gave a raving review for Hustle and Flow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that was, I mean, an Academy nominated film.
Yeah, but even with...
But yeah, again, that's not his...
That's not his genre that he's normally into.
But he recognized a good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's sad. And then the day before, he died on April, I think, 3rd or 4th. The day before, he put out a press release saying his cancer came back, so he's going to cut back on his workload. And he said the quote was, he's going to start doing the one thing he's always wanted to do, which is only review the movies that he wants to see.
Huh, nice.
So, you know, he was trying to turn into a positive. And it was really cool. It's like, all right, well, good for you, Roger. Keep fighting that stupid cancer.
Kills
the very next freaking day.
There's no movies worth seeing.
I know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Is that the moral of the story?
Maybe it is.
There are no movies worth seeing.
He looked at the slate coming up. He was like, oh, no.
Screw this.
Yep,
he's
like, I'm done.
I can't do another Iron Man. I'm out of here. And that's one of those things where, where did I find out about Roger Ebert's death? Twitter.
Yeah.
Someone put up RIP Roger Ebert.
I found it on Facebook.
And I was like, no way. This is a joke. And then I checked the Movie City News. There wasn't even a link there yet. And it got out fast, man.
See, that's the thing with the way that social networking is nowadays. I tend to now, anytime something like that pops up,
you gotta check.
I am so skeptical.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, okay, so this is the next guy they just killed.
Right. Yeah. Like, they almost killed TMZ, almost killed Lil Wayne.
Exactly.
Getting his last rights and shit.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Just because you're dead on the internet doesn't mean you're actually dead.
But like 10 minutes later, it was all over to Twitter. RIP Roger Ebert. So, oh man, sets. Pour one out for the Ebes tonight.
Exactly.
Anybody know what he is now in movie Shangri-La?
Yes, he is.
Giving thumbs up and thumbs down with his buddy Gene Siskel. They're back together.
Yep.
They're swirling around guy. Yeah.
Yeah,
but Siskel died in the 90s, you know, cancer as well. I believe, or a heart attack.
Something like that.
Something horrible. So Siskel and Ebert giving thumbs up to movies in the big sky. Thanks, guys. We appreciate it. All the years of awesome reviews. All right, so format of the show. Angel, you're going to recognize this because I just lifted it straight out of my Monday Night Appearances
right on
SBK Live. We're going to do a box office review. We're going to talk about the new movies coming out. But first, we're going to start out with the Netflix Instant Pick of the week. So here we go. I got the Netflix Instant Randomizer 9000 right here. Shake it all up.
That's fancy technology.
Oh, yeah.
Super fancy. So, Angel, if you want to go ahead and reach your hand in the randomizer while I pull up my Netflix verification app.
Yes.
Because sometimes
the Cinema Crispity, so Netflix verification.
You know, like once a month, they take movies, they take them up, they put them down. Oh, I don't have to check. This one is definitely on there. Kumare, documentary Kumare. This is a great documentary. Kumare. I actually saw this at last year's Florida Film Festival.
Oh, right on.
It's about a dude who he's an Indian feller. I mean, born in New Jersey. I mean, he's an Indian American, and he got interested in religious gurus and yogis and stuff like this. So he goes to India and he like travels around. He's like 20-year-old guy, something like that. And he meets a bunch of these people, and he sees that there's a lot of them that are really into it, that really believe that they're religious healers and gurus. And there's obviously a bunch that are charlatans, and they're in it.
I remember this now. Yeah.
Okay, I might have even mentioned it on the show.
I mean,
this is a fascinating documentary. So he sees all this. He's like, all right, I'm going to bring this. I'm going to see what happens if I do this in America. And so he grows his hair long. He grows his beard long. He calls himself Kumare. And then he literally just shows up in some town in Arizona, some random town, opens up a yoga studio with some chicks to help him out. And then he just starts doing classes and talking about your inner peace and your inner being. He starts coming up with all these crazy things, and he has them saying ridiculous mantras in like Hindi. And they're saying things like I'm an idiot, you know, like really stupid things like that. But they don't know what they're saying.
Yeah.
And they're getting like inner peace out of it. So he kind of starts it in a cynical way to see how do people fall for this stuff. But then it changes. It changes on him. The tables get turned. People start, you know, they actually get benefits from his teachings. And he's like, this is throwing me off, man. And his whole goal was to do this for a while, sucker a bunch of people in, and then at the end reveal, like, ta-da, I'm actually an American. I'm a dude just like you, anyone else. But when it came time to do that, he really struggled.
He couldn't do it.
I mean, you got to see if that's like a big part of the end, whether he can or whether he doesn't.
The catch line is pretty funny for the movie. I'm looking at the...
What do you got?
The cover of it?
Yeah.
The true story of a false prophet.
Yes.
That's awesome.
That's a great tagline.
That's awesome.
So it's a really, really good documentary, Kumare, on the Netflix Instant. Saw that at last year's Florida Film Fest.
Right on.
Good pick, Angel. Good job. Good job, dude. All right, so here we go. Now we're going to get into the box office for the weekend. We are recording this a little early because we had a small amount of time where we can make this happen. So we're doing the Friday estimates, right, Drew?
Correct, sir.
Well, I also
have weekend estimates for it, too.
But they're
heavy estimates.
The projections.
Yeah, the projections, not estimates.
We'll see how Yahoo Movies does on with their projections.
All right, so according to Yahoo Movies, this week at number 5, we have Tyler Perry's Temptation, Confessions of a Marriage Counselor.
Nice.
which made I had a Friday estimate of $3.4 million, a weekend projection of $11 million for a week for a total projection of 39.4.
And
is that the one with Kim Kardashian?
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yes, that's the one where Tyler Perry asked her to walk and talk at the same time.
Which
and
she is probably getting, a bad idea.
She's getting panned for it. Yeah. The whole movie is getting panned. I actually read a really interesting article on Jezebel.com about how this movie shows that not only is Tyler Perry a hack artist, but he's also a reprehensible human as well. Because this movie is all about him. It's more of his Christian moralizing, because he does that very heavily in all of his movies. Yeah. He goes Christian right. And it's about his definition of what makes a good woman versus a bad woman, and how the good woman is the one that keeps the home and is subservient and like she has sex with the light off and stuff. But then the devil comes in the form of some dude and seduces her away. And at one point he rapes her pretty much, because she's like, no, no, no. But he's like, yeah, no, you want it. And they have sex.
Awesome.
And she's ashamed later, but he's like, yeah, you wanted that. You know, your body said you wanted it. So Tyler Perry shows a rape, you know.
That's kind of heavy for Tyler Perry.
Kind of a statutory rape. And and then it turns out that this dude, I'm going to just go ahead and blow out all these plot details, because no one's going to see this. None of us do we know are going to see this movie. And this is ridiculous. Then what turns out is that this dude who is the devil, who is very heavily alluded to as being the devil, that he forced himself on this woman who's cheating on her husband, the marriage counselor.
Please tell me the kid's the Antichrist.
No. What happens is this guy ends up having AIDS.
Sweet.
Wow. So he's going around town. Heavy, dude. And he's going around town giving women HIV.
So now this woman
has HIV because she's the bad woman, because she strayed from the path. Even though she was saying no, she was pretty much raped. You know, it's like, but because even though she's the victim of rape, she deserves the HIV that she gets, because then her husband ends up leaving her and goes to another person. And then she's like, because she's telling this whole story to one of her patients, who's talking about like wanting to have an affair, and she's like, nope, this is why you shouldn't have an affair, because you're gonna get AIDS and you deserve it, because I deserved it.
Whoa,
that's messed up.
That's
dude.
Crazy.
Wow. It's victim blaming and it's all the wrong things about it's misogyny, you know.
Wow,
intense Christian moralizing
coming
misogyny.
From him.
Yeah,
coming from Tyler Perry, who you know, there's rumors about him being you know. Homosexual, closet homosexual.
That's what happens when you dress up as a woman all the time.
I guess so. No one questions Martin Lawrence's sexuality, you know. And he, Big Mama's House, you know, he made three of those things. Yeah. So I don't know. That was a very interesting article. And you know, I kind of got to agree that Tyler Perry is not only a hack, but a horrible, horrible person.
Awesome.
But hey, that's what happens when you're a filmmaker. You put out art. Yeah. You're going to be reflected in your art. So now we know who Tyler Perry is.
Yeah, that's right? He's obviously not a good person.
So don't stray from the path, ladies, or else you'll get the HIV and you deserve it, according to Tyler Perry.
All right, number four this week, we have The Croods.
Statue Perry Rape.
that had a Friday estimate of $5.8 million, a weekend projection of $21 million, for a grand total projection of $125.7 million.
The Croods family movie. You got a little angel.
Oh, this is the cartoon one, yeah?
This is the cartoon.
The caveman.
Fox
caveman.
Movies.
Yeah. Right. Any chance you're going to take your kids to see this?
We have not gone to a movie theater as of yet. So all the movies.
So a little too young for that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that comes on the red box.
That makes you a responsible parent.
Yeah, good job.
So yeah.
Thank you for that.
We do it at home. So we watch movies at home. And so I'll wait till it comes out on DVD.
Have you seen anything lately with the young one that you guys have really enjoyed?
We were talking about it.
Wreck-It Ralph?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one is, and it's interesting, and it's fascinating how when Hollywood gets it right in the sense of this, they know that a lot of these movies aren't going to be seen unless parents bring their kids.
Right.
Yeah.
So they figure, you know, the guys that get it right, the studios that get it right, are the ones that give you enough as an adult that keep you entertained.
Yeah.
And keep you engaged in the movie.
No, exactly. It's like the old school cartoons that were originally made for adults. Like,
yeah.
You have to cater to the adult crowd
at
certain points in time. But at the same point in time, you got to cater to the kids, too. So, you know, certain point in times, you hear the adults laugh. Certain point in times, you hear the kids laugh.
Right. So with Wreck-It Ralph, it's probably one of the better ones of recent time where there's enough there, especially if you're an 80s kid, you're going to see this and you're going to be like,
all the video game references, you know, and stuff.
And then, you know, your kid is going to be like, Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Kid, yeah, that's the new character for the kids. Yeah, yeah. They're all new characters to the kids. Yeah.
So it was that one's really good. That one's been on a high rotation.
I gotta agree. That's a really, yeah. really good movie. And yeah, it's because there's a difference between a kids movie and a family movie. You know, something like, and then The Croods is supposed to be a family movie where it's for everyone. You should be able to take your grandma and, and the littlest ones and everyone in between. Everyone should be able to laugh at something, enjoy it. Even this, you know, if you're lucky, you can get the cynical teenagers to chuckle at something, a fart joke here. Though.
What's funny to me is the movies that I think that she's going to dig. Mm. And so, for example, this is the one that stands out just for you. Do you guys remember Bolt?
Yes, the dog.
Superhero
John Travolta.
Right.
The way that movie starts is like way intense.
It doesn't it start like because it's a dog. It's a dog stunt dog.
Yeah,
and
he thinks
it's movie
real
set.
Life.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
So he thinks that's his real life.
Yeah.
She does not like it. I can't get her past that first because it's way too intense.
Wow.
With all the helicopters and all that kind of stuff, and she's not interested at all.
Then you might want to hold off on a Babe 2, Pig in the City, for a while. That has some intense scenes. Yeah. There's a pit bull chasing around Babe around the city, and it's like, oh, yeah, this is a family movie. Yeah. George Miller, you Mad Max crazy MF.
It's interesting. It's interesting.
Awesome, awesome. It's, now you're opening up to a whole new world of family movies and animated fare.
This is gonna suck.
You're going to find the gems, man.
Yeah, there are some really good movies out there.
We are huge Pixar fans here, like most people are. You know, oh man, good stuff.
All right, number three this week we have G.I. Joe Retaliation. It had a Friday, I guess, estimate of $6.7 million, a weekend projection of $22 million, for a grand total of $87 million projected.
Oof, man, this movie is boring as hell.
They're going to make more of them.
Of course they are.
Yeah, because these movies make money internationally. In its opening weekend, it made $80 million internationally, so it'll probably make another $80 to $100 this weekend. That's where it's going to make most of its money.
What I find fascinating about this was what happened with Channing Tatum's character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Originally, he was dead in the first, like, 3 minutes of the movie.
And they added scenes.
And then because of his popularity with,
Magic Mike, 21 Jump Street, all that happened around the same time.
Right. They went back and like
reshot it. Yep.
Yeah. I would have liked a movie on that.
The making of
all that drama behind like studio heads and talking to
him. And then the studio, they were like, "Oh, we're putting this off 8 months because we need to convert it to 3D. We're making that decision." Which was BS. It tested awfully, and the main complaint was that Channing Tatum's gone right away because people were joking about when they make a G.I. Joe 2, they should just like clean the slate, you know, wipe out everyone from the first movie and just do a whole new G.I. Joe. No one thought they would actually do that.
But they did. They totally did.
They wiped them all out and came up with whole new G.I. Joes, which included getting rid of old Duke in the first, you know, I guess it would have been like the first 5 minutes. But they definitely added at least two scenes involving him playing video games with
The
Rock.
He's in all the clips. So if you don't know
They blow
anything,
like half his scenes.
If you don't know anything, you think,
Channing Tatum.
You happen to be a fan of his, you go watch this. He's done in 5 minutes.
He's done in like the first 15.
And then the people that The Rock teams up with are nobody. It's like, we don't know who these people are. They're trying to break new people. Yep. And they're just boring,
random
bland,
white guy, random white girl.
Yep. And then Bruce Willis shows up and phones it in.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Phones it in, Bruce Willis. It's sad when he does that. We don't really recommend G.I. Joe.
No, we don't.
So I'd say like wait for it to hit HBO and then maybe check it out then.
Yeah.
All right, so it's number two.
All right, number two this week, we have Jurassic Park in the Third Dimension.
Nice.
That had a Friday estimate of $7.7 million. Had a weekend projection of $18 million. It's only going to be out for 1 weekend, so there you go.
Just the weekend,
dollars.
Right?
Yeah, yep. Because it comes out, well, maybe an extra week, depending on how much money it does, they can hold it over.
They might hold it over for the week.
If it's profitable for them to hold it over, and an $18 million weekend is okay. The thing is, what was the big first 3D re-release? Like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, they did something. It wasn't the first Star Wars. It wasn't Titanic. They released something. And it made like, I had a 35. It was an animated film. It was either Beauty and the Beast or Lion King. It was the Lion King. I found it.
Well, dude, everybody loves the Lion King.
Well, all these movies everyone loves. You know, everyone loves Jurassic Park, you know. But the Lion King, first weekend 3D, made like $45 million. So studios were like, ka-ching, dollar signs in the eyes. They scheduled all these 3D re-releases, but none of them are making much money. They just did a Top Gun one that made like $5 million.
They did Top Gun in 3D.
Top Gun 3D for like a week, leading up to coming out on Blu-ray. Jurassic Park is coming out on Blu-ray, so that's why.
So this is like a teaser thing?
Yeah, it's like a big commercial.
Exactly.
When we saw a while ago, remember we saw Taxi Driver?
Yes.
That was like a week before it came out on
Taxi
Blu-ray.
Driver in 3D?
No. They just re-released it in theaters.
Yeah, they put it on theaters, like a one-night-only thing. They did that with Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs, back-to-back showing of that, and then Blu-ray a week later. So that's what the whole Jurassic Park deal is. $18 million on it. They might hold it over for another week. It is something I would love to see in 3D.
Yeah, seriously.
Jurassic Park is awesome.
I wish I had the time.
But I don't know if we have time this week with the Florida Film Festival and everything.
Yeah, probably not.
We'll tease that in a little bit. But we're all fans of Jurassic Park, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. That movie was awesome.
So I say, you know, obviously go out there. See it if you can. Number one movie.
And number one movie this weekend, we have Evil Dead, which has a Friday estimate of $11.5 million, a weekend projection of $27 million.
On a budget of 17 million bucks.
Wow.
So it's already making its money.
Oh, yeah.
If 17 million, it's funny. All right. 17 million is a low budget film.
Oh, yeah.
But $17 million Evil Dead, that's a huge budget compared to the original.
Yeah.
You know, they spent so little money on the first one, and this one, they got some CG effects in there along with the practical stuff.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
Neither have I.
Angel, obviously.
I've seen the commercials.
You've seen the commercials.
It doesn't look like my bag at all.
Not in my wheelhouse at all.
What I'm reading about it is that the humor and the fun of the original The Evil Dead is gone.
That's why I liked it so much.
That's what makes it campy. That's what makes it enduring. You know, Bruce Campbell's freaking unibrow and everything. You know, it's over the top. This one, it's all gone. It's much more slick and you know, just modern atmosphere and stuff. Much more serious, and then they go over the top with the gore and the violence and the blood. Is what I'm hearing.
Right.
And as I get older and older. We were just talking about this, Drew.
Yep.
You know, the whole thing is people get desensitized, you know, to violence over time because you watch so much of it. You got to see more and more. It's happening the opposite with me, man. As I get older,
I'm agreeing with him. Actually,
I've become more and more sensitive to this. All the you know, especially when they get to like needles and eyeballs
that stuff. As far as the horror genre goes, when it comes to that, I've never been a fan. I've always been like, there's scary movies, and then there's, you know, stuff that
the gory stuff,
and I've always been able to make a, you know, separation between the two.
Yeah. And the thing is, this one does have good reviews in terms of the intensity is supposed to be there. I mean, it's like 90 minutes of just boom in your face, and it gets ratcheted more and more. And I do like that. I love to see how, especially this guy's a first time director too. It's his debut film. It's a pretty big deal for a debut movie.
Given that franchise, yeah.
So, you know, I'll probably end up waiting for home video DVD just so I can, like, fast forward, avert my eyes, like, get in the privacy of my home so no one sees how much of a pussy I really am, you know? Even though I'm freely admitting it now, but, you know, I just can't do that stuff sometimes.
I mean, I agree. When I was a kid, when I was in high school, I used to watch the gory movies and just laugh in the face of the violence.
Right.
And now that I'm older and I'm experienced and I've had some pretty terrible things happen to me, I can kind of relate to the violence.
You can relate to
it's like, oh, no, I don't, oh, God, that hurts so much.
It's like, oh, that happened to his ankle, that happened to my ankle.
Exactly, I don't want to watch that.
Yeah, no, thank you. So I guess we're all going to hold off on the Evil Dead. Plenty of horror fans out there, I'm sure, listening to the show.
No, just Evil Dead, not The Evil Dead.
That's right, just Evil Dead. If you guys see it, go ahead and tweet us. Let us know. Let us know what you thought of it. Facebook us, email us. We'll talk about your reviews next week. we'll leave this one up to the people.
Exactly.
So let the people review it. Let us know what you think about it, and we'll talk about it next week. All right. So new movies coming out this week. Actually, very light on the films on DVD. There's only one new movie on DVD on Tuesday. Huh. Hyde Park on Hudson. That's the one where Bill Murray plays Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
I always wanted to see that. It was playing at the NZ.
He was pretty decent with that, didn't he?
He got rave reviews. Yeah. People loved him as FDR.
Okay.
And the movie's well-liked in general. It's about the first time, the King's Speech, the stuttering King of England.
Right.
It's about him and his wife, Queen Elizabeth, visiting, well, actually it's Queen Elizabeth's mom, visiting FDR in America, and it's like the first time British royals were in America, maybe ever, actually. And they entertain them for the weekend. Like, here's some hot dogs, and they're like, oh, hot dogs, well, you know, all stuff. So it's supposed to be kind of a dramedy, but kind of, you know, a comedy dramedy type of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Murray is supposed to be the man.
Awesome.
So,
I mean, Bill Murray's awesome.
So that
it is.
Yeah. So keep an eye out for that. That'll probably be on Redbox and stuff like that pretty soon. Maybe Netflix Instant. You never know. fingers crossed. You got new movies coming out in theaters?
Oh, yeah. This week coming out in theaters, we have 42.
The Jackie Robinson movie?
Exactly.
Yep. Have you seen any commercials for this one?
Yeah, that looks to be good.
It does look pretty good.
When it comes to this particular, or these type of stories, I'm very particular on accuracy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, because everyone know, you know, you're brought up and you are well aware of Jackie Robinson's story.
You know the
story.
Outline of the story, yeah. But they can fudge the facts.
Exactly.
Though,
when you start doing that, then I think it takes away from, because his story is so awesome to begin with.
True.
I don't think you need to manufacture anything.
Right. Yeah,
you know
right.
what I mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
In particular with Jackie Robinson. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm going to be holding out for, to hear what, you know.
How accurate.
Yeah.
True.
That's
true.
Fair enough. To me with that.
Yeah. 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 It is one thing when you do just a normal movie, you can make up whatever you want. But if you're doing a biopic, you know, there's facts there already that you can double check.
Exactly.
And everything. Yeah. So all you got to do is stylize. Tell the facts. Stylize it. And we got a good movie.
Exactly.
Hopefully. We'll see. We'll see. What else is coming up?
Scary Movie 5.
Awesome. Can't wait. Fantastic. With guest starring
Charlie Sheen
and
Lindsay Lohan.
Awesome.
Ashley Tisdale.
Yeah. What's her name? Carmen's in it.
Is she
Carmen Electra? Yeah, they have a bedroom scene.
Oh, my
awesome.
Goodness.
Fantastic.
Spectacular.
I can't believe. Well, you know,
oh, and apparently, according to this, they have a Black Swan satire in this one.
Oh, sweet. Awesome. 2 years later. Yep. Oh, and actually, in the commercials, they're spoofing Inception a little bit. Nothing like spoofing a movie 5 years after the fact.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but way to be on the ball there, guys.
Yep.
All right, what else is coming out?
To the Wonder.
All right, that's the new Terrence Malick, the guy who did Didn't Red Line.
Okay.
Tree
this is
of
the guy
life.
That does like a movie every 7 years.
Well, yeah, for a while, like he had like a 30-year gap at one point, and then yeah, he took forever. But now he did Tree of Life a couple years ago.
Okay.
He's got this Two to Wonder movie coming out with Ben Affleck and Rachel McAdams,
and
it's
Javier
a love story.
Bardem.
Javier Bardem, but it's also supposed to be practically a silent movie. Like there's no dialogue; it's all
awesome.
Music, and it's very dreamy.
Great.
And very very arty. And then he has another one already scheduled to come out like in a year or two. That's a little more accessible. Plus, he's working on an IMAX film project about dinosaurs and the beginning of time. And they're going to be like, if you see it on an IMAX screen, it's going to be like life-size dinosaurs and stuff, you know?
Yes, I want to see Terrence Malick's dinosaurs.
Yeah, yeah, Terrence Malick's dinosaurs, pretty much. So but that's exciting. That's very
Sounds
exciting.
Awesome.
So, Two to Wonder, that got some mixed reviews. I like the Cannes Film Festival and everything because it is over-the-top arty. But, you know, that's what you expect
that's
from a Terrence Malick. That's
man.
The way he rolls. Either you take it or you leave it. You know, highway or the byway.
Exactly.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break. We're going to go into the Crespo Disco, and we're going to listen to a couple songs. I had a couple songs here from two different movie soundtracks. So take a guess what they are. I'll let you know when we come back. We're going to come back with the Crespo Dome. Angel, are you ready for the Crespo Dome?
I'm ready, man.
It gets crazy, man. Choose your weapon wisely.
Choose your weapon wisely. Three people enter. And three people leave.
All right.
All right, so we're going to be right back. Listen to Cinema Crespo Episode 13 with Drusa Cogburn and special guest Angel. Be right back. Thank you. Hey, we're taking a quick break here in the middle of the Crespo Disco. I'm Chris Crespo. I'm here with Samuel Jackson.
Yo, Money, what's going on?
Not much, man. Thanks for hanging out. We really appreciate it. Just wanted to remind people to go to chriscrespo.com. Chriscrespo.com is where you can check out my reviews, Netflix Pick of the Week, past episodes of Cinema Crespo Diso. It's pretty sweet, right? What do you think, Sam?
I don't give a damn.
Well, I thought you were here to support me, man.
I'm the tyranny of evil men.
Well, that's pretty, that's not what I expected when I booked you for this commercial. Well, I appreciate you coming on to the show anyway, but again, we're reminding people to go to chriscrespo.com. Also on iTunes, you can rate the show, rate us 5 stars, because we are a 5-star show, and leave us a nice review. Let people know what you think of us and what you like about us, and let us know, because, you know, everyone likes to get patted on the head every now and then, you know, right? Am I right, Sam? Why are you looking at me like that?
I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
All right, well, you know, don't gotta get so in my face, buddy. All right, well, it's facebook.com/cinemacrespodiso, twitter.com/crespodiso. I am at I am Chris Crespo. Drewster Cogburn is at antihero 419. Samuel Jackson, you want to give out your Twitter? I know you love Twitter.
You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying, but do you want to give out your Twitter at all, or?
Yeah.
Wait. Go ahead and tell them what it is.
You're a smart motherfucker, that's right.
I am. Are you implying that I should tell people? I don't know what it is. Anyway, thank you, Samuel Jackson, for coming on and helping me with this commercial. You are a pretty cool dude.
The way you've been there for me and all of us for so many years.
That's true. I have been there for you and all of whoever those other people are for so many years. So I'm glad you can finally repay the favor. And all you guys can enjoy the show. Enjoy the rest of Cinema Crespodiso episode 13 with Angel Rivera. And you are listening to Cinema Crespodiso on the SBK Radio Network. Welcome back to Cinema Crespo Diso. That was the Crespo Disco. A couple songs in there. Some of you might have recognized them. The first track was from the Solaris soundtrack.
One of my favorite soundtracks.
Great soundtrack by Cliff Martinez. The name of that track was First Sleep. And the second song was from the Code 46 soundtrack.
Another one of my favorite soundtracks.
Actually, talking about soundtracks.
Yeah.
Go ahead and finish. I got this idea that I have pitched to a couple bars. I want to run it by you. You okay. Just reminded me of something.
All right, word. Code 46, that's a Free Association. Name of that track was Shanghai. They both kind of have a similar sound, a little, yep. You know, kind of dreamy stuff. Good,
oh, yeah.
Good stuff. Hope you guys enjoyed that. If you just fast-forwarded through it, I understand. It's
so,
cool. What do you got?
Doing the DJ thing, and I'm trying to build up different, I don't only want to do DJ nights. I'd like to
word.
Get in on some happy hours and stuff.
True.
So I pitched this idea to a couple bars, and I was like, look, it's going to be, you know, if I'm DJing there, let's say from 5 to 7, 5 to 8.
Yeah.
I'm want to try to, you know, steal it off of Curtis Earth and everything, trying to make it participation friendly and everything.
Uh-huh. True.
So I'm doing, want to do, it's basically 2 hours of soundtracks.
Oh, right? Okay.
Songs from movie soundtracks.
Stuff that people recognize.
Right. Yeah. Somehow I'm like going through all my music catalog and everything, and I realize that's one of the things that I've purchased. As much as I've purchased music, I have purchased soundtracks.
A lot of soundtracks.
Oh, holy crap, it's ridiculous. And so I'm thinking, this could be fun, you know, 2 hours, and every song I'm going to play is off a movie soundtrack.
Nice, I like that.
And then
that.
During
like
that time, I'll break out a little game out of it, you know, all right, the next person that can tell me what movie this song came from.
Yeah, get a free drink or something.
Get a drink, a shot,
or
a beer.
Yeah.
So I think hopefully I'll be able to announce that pretty soon.
I think it's a great idea.
Right. Hell yeah, that's awesome.
You're like, oh, that's Indiana Jones. Yeah. Which one? No. Temple of Doom, you get it. All right, free shot of Jaeger for you, buddy.
Sweet.
That's a great idea, Angel. Wow. Yeah, if people don't know, you're a DJ around town. Why don't you go ahead and plug a couple of things that you're doing? Come to your regular gigs.
The regular gigs right now stand as this. Every Thursday night, I am at the Lodge downtown from 10 to 2.
Word.
That's, you know, pretty fun, open kind of freeform kind of thing.
Yeah.
I kind of play a little bit of everything.
Nice.
Kind of serve catering to the crowd that's there.
Nice.
Sundays, I'm at Johnny's Filling Station over there off of Michigan and
Edgewater?
Michigan and Conway. No. Yeah, Michigan. And
somewhere around there.
Yeah. You know where Johnny's Filling Station is.
Everyone knows where it is.
And that's Durham Brunch. I start at 11 and go to about 5. And that one's more kind of, I try to do, you know, more relaxing. Definitely try to do heavy on the R&B and kind of soul kind of thing.
Set the mood for people to sit down, enjoy some drinks and food and nice conversations and stuff.
Yeah. And then
it is a good time. I've been out there during a couple of, spending a few brunches.
You know, just kind
of
keep it fun.
Yeah.
And
it's a very relaxed time. It's very cool. Yeah. I dig it.
And then something new that I'm getting ready to start, it'll be Saturday nights over at George's Tavern in Sanford.
Off of the 1792.
1792,
big old 1792.
And that's just going to be, I'm trying to build that up as a straight up just 80s. Like, for a lot of people, 80s is a punchline for a joke.
Yeah.
For some
play
of us.
Some Wham.
Yeah, you know, so for some of us, it was actually a fun time to live. And so it's not going to, you know, I'm not just strictly doing, like, all hair metal from the 80s
right.
or all, you know, pop. It's going to be all, you know, just a lot of fun and
nice.
Good time and stuff that you recognize. And
get some Tears for Fears in there.
Maybe one or two. And then just hopefully stuff, because of the way that regular radio is nowadays, hopefully you're going to hear stuff that you haven't heard anywhere else.
True. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That stuff that's out of the top 40.
Right, but that is, really cool music.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you got great taste in music for sure.
So.
You turn me on to a lot of good stuff. You know what the SBK Live, what the hell is Angel listening to every Tuesday nights, new music. Like
that's going to come back.
The park and stuff. Hell yeah, it's got to come back, man. You got to tell the people. Got to tell the people about the good music. Well, let's get into I want to get right into the Crespo Dome, where things get pretty intense and wild, and I'm going to rearrange things real quick because I got a bunch of questions.
Okay.
One of the questions I got was from @NathanWilliams_. And he asked, he wanted us to talk about how have movie soundtracks impacted the movie industry?
Nice.
So we're going to rearrange something.
Very appropriate.
Let's jump right into movie soundtracks in the movie industry.
Well, movie soundtracks have revolutionized the movie industry.
Yeah,
when you've got a top 40 song, you know, that's playing during your movie, then people are going to go buy the soundtrack.
And
that's extra cash.
Extra cash money, yeah. And so now there's a difference between soundtracks and film scores.
Yeah.
So you can get the music, the original music that's made for the movie, and then music that's inspired by
or that's been plugged into the movie or whatever.
Yeah.
I just grabbed a couple scores. I like the score for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
You're right. The Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross.
Fascinating. And Moneyball.
Oh yeah,
the score for Moneyball. For whatever reason,
I think that's actually Cliff Martinez who did the Solaris soundtrack, which we played. Yeah,
so he did. There's a couple pieces of music in the Moneyball where even you might not be engaged into the movie, but the music is so freaking awesome that it gives me goosebumps.
Yeah.
And I just had to go get it. And the music that they play underneath when they're talking about the streak. And the way that piece of music just builds and everything.
While the streak is building?
Yeah. So corny geek music part of me. That's one of the songs that I have when I listen. I wake up in the morning to music.
Right.
That's one of the pieces of music that I listen to.
Oh, that's awesome. Awesome. Very nice.
Very nice. Awesome.
That makes me want to rewatch Moneyball. I haven't seen it since it was in theaters.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Gore is fascinating.
That's a lie because I didn't see it in theaters. We watched it here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I can't remember. I don't think you watched it without me.
No, I didn't know I could have watched Moneyball. Why would I watch Moneyball?
Because it's a great Brad Pitt movie directed by the guy who did Capote.
Still.
Okay, maybe.
It's a baseball movie.
Maybe I got to rewatch it again.
The other thing it's fascinating about soundtracks, and I think it happened in our generation, is that you can have a really crap movie.
Yeah.
Amazingly crap movie.
Yeah.
And the soundtrack is what's going to save your movie's ass.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah.
And there's tons of soundtracks that I have that I'm
terrible
like,
movie.
I was like, oh. And then what happens is like, oh, the soundtrack's so good. Let me go watch the movie.
They ruined it. They're not even using their own music right.
I can remember back in the day in high school, I had the Spawn soundtrack because it's it's crazy. It's trippy. It's nothing but mishmash of metal and electronic music.
Yeah.
And it is nuts. And that movie is so bad. It almost killed Michael Jai White's career.
All right, here's another one. Judgment Day.
That's like a legendary sound.
That's an amazing
movie. Great music on that one.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only piece of music that you're going to have Pearl Jam and Cypress Hill.
Right.
Exactly.
That is the only song that they've ever done together is on that soundtrack.
That reminds me of the soundtrack to all the Crow movies had those soundtracks.
Great soundtracks.
The only good Crow movie was the first one.
Well, yeah, the first one's the only good one.
But the rest
of the soundtracks. They kept that up. You know? They at least kept that up. Escape from L.A., not a very good movie, but a great soundtrack. That Escape from LA soundtrack has a Sugar Ray song on there before they turn pop. It has,
oh, yeah,
when they're a hardcore, like hardcore punk.
Crazy
band.
Hardcore punk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I actually, like, what the heck is this?
I have that album because on that album, I think it's the right album.
Yeah.
Linda Evangelista, the model,
uh-huh.
She's naked on the cover.
I had that album.
Right. Is that the right one? That's when they were still kind of
hard.
Hardcore,
yeah.
Wow.
And yeah, I had that.
And that's the only reason why I bought that album.
Because it's like the
this hot chick.
They're like, well, this might sell us some. And it worked.
Yeah.
There you go. Market testing. Put naked chicks on your stuff. And
always
it will
works.
It will sell, no matter what's inside. All right. Well, we've got a little nice movie soundtrack conversation going on there. All right. Before I get to the other questions, real quick. Drew, I want to tease a Florida Film Festival 2013. We're gonna do a bonus episode.
Yes, we are.
At the end of the Florida Film Festival. We're gonna see a whole bunch of movies this week. We've got our press passes.
Oh yeah.
We're gonna have a guest on next week, who a film critic who's in from out of town. We're gonna talk about all the movies we see. So that's gonna be a lot of fun.
Oh yes.
So I'll definitely plug that. And if you're in town, Florida Film Festival is happening this week. Check it out, FloridaFilmFestival.com.
Definitely.
I'm sure they appreciate the free plug.
Yes.
Drew, you tried to watch Lincoln this week, I heard.
Yes, I did. I attempted.
How did that work out for you?
Well, you know, I woke up a little tired, and I may or may not have been inebriated, and I started watching Lincoln, yeah. And it started off nice, and Daniel Day-Lewis is awesome. He is awesome. He's all Lincoln-y.
He won the Academy Award.
Super tall and kind of hunched over and being very...
Cracking jokes, telling stories.
Yep, very Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
But it's 2.5 hours long, and at a certain point in time, it just becomes a bunch of old men in wigs talking.
Yeah.
And I kind of fell asleep for the majority of the movie, and then woke up for like the last 15 minutes.
So you saw at the beginning, he was trying to end slavery.
Yeah, and then at the end, apparently he'd ended slavery.
Spoiler.
Spoiler, Lincoln ends slavery and then gets shot in the head.
Double spoiler. Yeah. Man, you're just giving everything away on this one. How dare you, Drew?
But, I mean, the parts that I saw were good.
Yeah.
So,
But you weren't in the right state of mind.
I guess I wasn't in the right state of mind for a long, boring political thriller.
Well, I can see some people thinking it's boring because it is very, very, very talky.
It's three hours, isn't it?
It's almost 3 hours. Yeah. It's people having conversations and, you know, political maneuvering. So depends on how interested you are in that kind of stuff.
Normally I am. I think if I had been in a better state of mind.
Yeah, if you maybe saw it in the evening or saw it in the theater, you know, where you're there to see the movie.
Exactly.
So you're just chilling on your very comfortable leather couch back at the house.
Yes.
And Angel, you haven't seen Lincoln yet?
No. Any
interest in it seeing at all?
I think you might get around to it? I will get around to it. It's for me, it's one of those things where 3 hours is a
long time.
You know what I mean?
It's a commitment.
And so, you know, when you have a 2.5-year-old running around and nothing exploding or no cartoon characters, not going to be interested.
She's not going to be interested at all. She won't like that movie for another 20, 25 years at least. You know, kids. That's what kids do to you. They sap away all your time and your energy, and then you find yourself just watching Wreck-It Ralph on repeat. All right, we watched the Hannibal pilot that was just on TV.
Yes, we did.
They did a pilot of Hannibal. They're doing a whole TV series based on the Hannibal Lecter character. And really, what they're doing is they're doing a prequel to Manhunter, Red Dragon. Did you ever see the original Hannibal Lecter Manhunter in the 80s?
So this is like, if I'm getting this right, this is based because he was in World War II, right? Or no?
Was he? I don't know. They haven't gotten that deep into it.
No. This is when he's still in the UK, though, right?
No, he's in America.
Oh, he's in America. Okay.
He's in America. And he's played by a Swedish fellow, Mads Mikkelsen, who's an awesome, awesome actor.
Great guy
with the bleeding eye in Casino Royale.
Yes.
He's in Valhalla Rising. He plays a one-eyed mute that like rips people's guts out with his bare hands.
He's in Flamin' Citrone.
Flamin' Citrone, which was a Netflix pick of the week that wasn't on Netflix.
Dude's good.
He's great. And he's a great Hannibal. He's very creepy, but he exudes intelligence when he speaks. But, you know, you can also tell there's something wrong with this guy. Hugh Dancy, I think he's a British actor. He's playing Will Graham, Special Agent Will Graham, William Peterson role in Manhunter. And then in the Red Dragon remake, the Ed Norton role. And this is about how he becomes friends with Hannibal, because that was the whole point of the original Red Dragon. Will Graham was friends with this guy. He turns out to be a serial killer, but he has to go back to him for assistance to find a Tooth Fairy serial killer.
Right.
I'm thinking, you know, a Hannibal TV series, if they get to do the whole thing and they get to play it out for a few years, it's all going to lead up to the series finale. Will be like leading up to the moments that lead up to the Red Dragon. At the very beginning of the Red Dragon movie, or, you know, the Red Dragon book. which would be cool. I'm interested in seeing the development of that friendship between Will Graham and Hannibal Lecter.
Then would you need to see them redo that movie with these guys that are doing it on TV?
No, because there's already two versions of that movie.
I know. It's,
yeah,
it's
so like, I don't
need a third.
I don't need a third one. I'll just go back and watch the 80s one, the Michael Mann one with Brian Cox as Hannibal Lecter, the awesome 80s score, it's super electronic. I'm all about that movie, so we'll, they don't need to remake it. But I'm interested in this, even though it's network TV.
It's done real.
It's done well.
It was done really. I was really impressed by the production value for network television.
It still has that CSI. You described it as high contrast in your look, you know, which is very accurate. So you know, we'll see how it goes over time. Pilots are always usually these days they put a lot of money into pilots, so that usually a pilot starts out really strong and then the series kind of falters for a little while. Yeah. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, the pilot was great.
It was a very good pilot. All right, let's get back into the questions. Actually, you know what? Before I get into the questions, I want to play a quick game.
All right.
Because I'm going to start doing this now where we're going to do Drewster Cogburn versus the world.
Yes.
Whenever we have a guest in, I'm going to come up with a different game. It's going to be Drew versus the guest, and we're going to keep track of who wins and who loses. It's Drew versus the field. All right. This week, brand new game called Guess the Grosses. Guess the Grosses.
Okay.
I got five movies here. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Five movies here with a theme. The theme's going to be very obvious very quickly. And I'm going to go back and forth between you guys. You just tell me how much you think it made. The closest, we'll go Price is Right rules. The closest without going over is going to get it right. Okay? So here we go. And then, of course, I'm sure you'll get the theme right away.
Is this just domestic or worldwide?
Just domestic. Okay. Just U.S. Great question. Great question. That's why you're here. All right. The first movie for Guess the Gross is from 2003. Charlie's Angels Full Throttle. How much did Charlie's Angels Full Throttle make? Angel, I'm going to start with you since you are the guest. How much? You get the first guess on this one.
Oh,
then we'll
man.
Go back and forth.
I remember this. This got a ton of hype.
And then horrible reviews.
Horrible reviews. But off the initial weekend, I will say that it made $60
million. $60 million total?
For the whole movie?
The whole domestic run total.
Oh,
Not just opening weekend. The whole run.
$150 million.
Drew, what do you say?
90.
It made $100 million total. Drew is closest without going over, so that's 1 point for Drew on that one.
Yes.
All right.
Starting off strong.
Number two, Guess the Grosses. We've already mentioned this movie, too. The Crow, City of Angels from 1996, the first sequel. The Crow, City of Angels. Drew, you got to go first this time. How much did The Crow, City of Angels make in its entire domestic run in 1996?
$50 million.
$50 million. Angel, what do you think?
Yeah. This was like a popular movie, but it didn't... I don't think it was like a commercially popular movie.
Right.
I still think it was kind of underground. I'm going to go $65 million.
$65 million. The total gross of The Crow, City of Angels 1996... $17.9 million.
Oh,
so you are both over.
Way over. Nobody gets the point.
No one gets the point on that one.
Wow. I didn't think it did that bad.
Yeah, neither did I.
All right. Number three movie, Guess the Grosses, from 1994, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Christopher Lloyd, Danny Glover, Angels in the Outfield. Angels in the Outfield. How much did this make in its total run? Angel, you go first, please.
$35 million.
$35 million. Drew, what do you say?
50.
It made $50 million.
Did
exactly.
It really?
Drew nailed it. Good job, Drew.
Nobody saw that movie.
Yeah.
I had it on VHS.
I figured it was a family movie.
Yeah,
so
family movie.
They're going to get more people out there to see it.
All right. So Drew's got 2 points. All right. So Angel, at this point.
Oh, he's got three. Oh, no.
Yeah, because no one got the second one. So Angel, at this point, all you can do is tie. If you tie, then it's a push. No one gets any points. So here we go. Number four movie, Guess the Gross, from 1998. City of Angels, the movie starring
Nicolas Cage
and Meg Ryan.
Super cheesy
romantic film,
man.
City of Angels.
Love that movie.
I know.
How much did it make in 1998?
Did they love it enough?
Drew, you go first.
Man.
What do you got, Drew?
That was another one where the soundtrack...
That was a very popular
Goo Goo
soundtrack.
Dolls that were on that.
Yeah, Goo Goo Dolls was the soundtrack
go
was more
popular. Let's go 45.
$45 million is Drew. Angel?
I'm going to go 50.
$78 million.
Oh,
so Angel
man.
Gets the point. Angel gets the point. So it's 2-1. And here we go. We got the last one. Number five from 2009. Angels and Demons, the sequel to The Da Vinci Code with Tom Hanks. 2009, Angels
Holy
and Demons.
Crap.
How much did this movie make? Angel, you go first.
I'm going to, even though it was panned,
it was
brutally, but yeah, people still went out and saw that because they love that crap. I'm going to say it's a $100
million
movie.
$100
million,
all right.
I'm going to say 120.
It made $133 million. Oh. Drew wins this one handily, 3-1. Good job, Drew. That's Guess the Grosses. Nice. We're going to start doing new games whenever there's someone in. Someone's in the studio. So here we go. Drew's got to take off. So me and Angel are going to finish it. Thanks a lot, Drew. We appreciate it. So Angel, it's just you and me.
All right.
We're going to continue in the Crestwood Dome. I got a bunch of questions here. People like to submit questions, different topics. So this one comes from, well, you know this guy, at Matt Celery.
Yeah.
Right? Good guy. Very good
Celery.
Guy. He wanted us to talk about our top five horror characters / movies. So that's an interesting question. So I guess we'll just do top five in general of both. We don't have to do five characters, five movies.
Right.
I can already tell you a couple of my, I'll tell you my top three horror movies right off the top of the bat. The Thing with with Kurt Russell, John Carpenter's The Thing, The Fly with Jeff Goldblum, and The Shining. All movies are The Something. The Fly, The Thing, The Shining. Those are my three favorite horror movies of all time for sure.
I don't know if it falls under horror, but one, I guess my favorite, like one of the movies I like to watch during Halloween and everything, Silver Bullet.
Yeah, it's a horror.
For me, to this day, I know it's got, Corey Haim is in it?
Yep.
And,
that's like late 80s, wasn't
it? Yeah, and then, what's his name? The crazy guy.
Well, you got me on that one. I'd have to try to pull it up, y'all.
I think I have it here.
And that's one that you watch every...
Gary Busey's in it.
Gary Busey. That's right.
That's like
right.
my own personal Halloween tradition.
Word.
That's one of the ones I like to watch.
That's cool. I do that with The Thing.
Yeah.
The Thing is like my... If it's Halloween time, I gotta watch that movie at least once. I mean, it's a werewolf movie. It's a horror film.
Yeah.
You know?
Other than that, man, like we were kind of referencing earlier, when it comes to the genre of horror...
Not into the gore and stuff. You're more into like the thrills.
The suspense and the drama and all that.
Okay.
I'm trying to think.
So how about like 80s... Because you're talking about being a child of the 80s, growing up during that time. How about the 80s slasher movies like the Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street?
I remember those movies. Yeah. Because they were huge, right?
Yeah,
I remember those.
They were very big.
But like, I've never got caught up. Scream. When Scream came out.
Scream was big.
I liked the first one.
Okay, yeah.
I liked the first one.
It was the first like postmodern horror thing where they're flipping all the conventions and all the things that people don't realize happen in horror movies all the time. Like, oh, look, we're messing with you. Yeah. You know, we're taking your expectations and we're flipping them. That was a lot of fun.
Now, I'm having to look at a list just to kind of refresh because I forget some of these movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I definitely, if you're going to consider this, on this particular list, I could consider it a horror movie.
Okay.
Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a zombie movie.
Yeah.
People get eaten. There's blood and stuff.
I thought
yeah.
that was brilliant.
Shaun of the Dead is great.
Speaking of that, so then Shaun of the Dead and then... the one that they did in that was based in London.
Hot Fuzz?
No. It was the straight up zombie movie.
28 Days Later?
28 Days Later.
Yeah.
As far as I know, everyone's got their, their
zombie definitions.
Yeah,
technically, because they're not, the people in that movie don't die. They just get infected.
Right, so but it's like their variation of that, whatever. But that
it was definitely the
Danny
Boyle's take
up,
yeah.
I love that movie.
That first one is great.
Awesome. Yeah.
The second one was disappointing.
They ruined it.
Yeah. You know? And then it was double disappointing for me because the guy who directed it, Juan Carlos Fresnadillo, is from Spain. He's from España.
Right.
And he directed this great, great movie called Intacto.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. About guys who have luck and they can take luck from each other. Max von Sydow is like the world's luckiest person. He has everyone's luck saved.
That was him. Okay.
Yeah, that's that dude. That was his first movie. And then when I heard he was doing 28 Weeks Later, I'm like, oh, great. You know, this would be a match made in heaven. And then he turned in a crappy, crappy movie. Very, very disappointing.
And then to wrap it up, I guess would be Poltergeist.
Oh, that's a classic.
Yeah, that I mean,
that's all atmosphere, man.
As a kid, that had an impact on me,
yeah.
And I was shook.
And
like I saw that movie when I wasn't old enough to see that movie.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's the best time to see movies like that. Best time to see.
And that would
could actually affect you.
Yeah, to this day, I could read. There's certain things I remember.
Yeah,
another one, and I've never ever seen this movie from beginning to end.
Okay,
I've seen parts of it.
Okay,
The Omen.
The Omen, the original Omen?
That that movie, the parts I've seen scare the crap out of me. And because of the topics that it deals with and everything, I've just never been comfortable with those kind of scary movies.
With the Catholic upbringing and everything. Yeah, that's right up here. Like Rosemary's Baby type stuff. Yeah,
so
I steer
clear of those kind of movies.
Those hit a nerve.
Yeah. Like when we were last season with...
American Horror Story. They went all Catholic on you.
Right. And I was actually genuinely surprised that I was able to keep watching it because they use so much of the Catholic religion in it.
Yeah.
I tend to kind of, okay.
You shy away from that
stuff. Yeah, I get it. All right, I'll catch it. You know.
You move on. Yeah. So, that's interesting. Poltergeist, that's one where it's like, if you watch the movie now, there's so many stretches where it's like the camera is just still and it's so quiet and they're building the atmosphere. Movies don't do that anymore. Now it's wall-to-wall music and it's got to be in your face. It's like the opposite of the new Evil Dead. You know? It's all about just making you stare at the screen like, oh, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? And then something, boom, you're like, oh my goodness, I went through the TV and now they're covered in pink goop and this is weird. This is so weird.
To me, like for me, I distinctly remember. Everything that happened in that movie
It got you.
Was real.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Those were all possibilities that could happen. You know what I mean?
They're here. Yeah. I can hear them.
I could be in the TV.
That's scary. That's crazy how it happens. You know, I also really like, I just thought of it. I mean, zombies in general. I was a huge zombie fan for a while. Like 4 or 5 years ago, I kind of got over genre. And I thought everyone else would be over it, too. But it's stronger than ever now with The Walking Dead and everything. Yeah. It's pretty crazy. And World War Z coming out this summer. Yeah. But, yeah, I guess. And then werewolf movies. Man, like there's American Werewolf in London.
That's another one.
That's a great one. The sequel, though. What's up with that? American Werewolf in Paris? Not good. Wolfman, Benicio del Toro.
I was disappointed
Very disappointing, you know. Why can't they crack that genre?
Yeah, to this day. That's funny. As far as the classic monster movies or whatnot, that's one they never got. They haven't gotten that right. I don't think. I mean, outside of Bride of Frankenstein and those, Frankenstein's another one that they've never been able to.
Right.
Quote unquote, get right.
Well, Drew and I, we talked about this on a previous episode where, zombies are still doing its thing, but, you know, we can see the end. The end is coming. Vampires came, they were huge. Now they're on their way out. Witches, they're a big thing this year. They're trying to push witches. I was thinking next is going to be Frankenstein. They're going to try to bring back Frankenstein somehow, but they're going to do sexy Frankenstein. You know, so they're going to go for the Twilight audience.
There
so Dr. Frankenstein is going to be a young dude. He's going to be ripped and really good looking. And then the Frankenstein monster will be made up of body parts of underwear models and stuff. So it'll be the best looking like Frankenstein monster you'll ever see.
That's funny, yeah.
And then after we said that, like a week later, they did announce that they're working now on a Frankenstein movie. That's all told from the perspective of Igor, the assistant, and Daniel Radcliffe is going to play Igor. Harry Potter himself.
Right on.
So here comes sexy Frankenstein.
There you go.
Except we're getting sexy Igor.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is the next one, the Frankenstein monster, and they won't get that right either.
No.
Actually, I think didn't they try? No, I'm thinking of a Beauty and the Beast thing that they did. Beastly last year. They came up with this movie, Beastly.
Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, so terrible. What are you going to do? all right, let's move on to another question here. Thanks, Nate, for that one. Actually, that was Matt Celery. Thanks, Matt Celery, and thanks, Nate, for a question earlier. At Sir Kyle, you know, we all know Sir Kyle. He asked, what is your favorite guilty pleasure film?
DC Cab.
DC Cab. Boom. You had it right off the top of your
head. DC Cab.
That's a fun movie,
DC,
man.
And it's to this day, and Kevin jokes about it all the time.
Yeah.
I think I was probably the first person that told him that he needed to watch DC Cab.
Oh, you turned him on to it? That's always fun.
I remember seeing that movie when it first came out. I think... I convinced my dad to take me to go see it or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I think as far as ensemble cast, because everybody that was involved in that movie, nobody was super huge.
It was Bill Maher.
Yeah, you got.
Well, Mr. T was probably the biggest star there.
Yeah, you're probably right. So you got him in there.
What was the Barbarian Brothers?
They're in there.
What was that all about? Yeah, where did those guys come from? Two meathead bodybuilders with
Gary
with
Busey's
perm
in
hairs.
There.
Gary Busey, he just plays a crazy drug using. Yeah. He plays Gary Busey pretty much.
That
does have a great cast.
So to me, you got Irene Cara is in there,
and then it's the old, it's the traditional storyline too of they're shutting us down. We need to raise the money to save the DC cab company. And there's like the rival cab company. And remember, there's that one scene where like a bunch of kids are hanging out with a pimp on the street and they're checking out his car.
Yeah.
And then he pulls up in that taxi cab that he pimps it out. And all the kids come over. He's like, "Yeah, you want to hang out with me, the cab driver?" Yeah.
I thought, to me, that one is one of my classic favorites. And another one is Mother Jugs and Speed.
Oh, that's a 70s. Isn't that 70s or is that 80s?
Totally 70s. Yeah. And that's Bill Cosby, Harvey Keitel, and Raquel Welch.
Man, that's a classic.
And it's funny. So like when I'm talking with my friends, and that one, like that one's not set. It's probably the beginnings of a drama comedy movie.
Yeah.
So there's some funny elements to it, but it's 70s.
It still gets heavy too at
times.
Yeah,
so there's some heavy parts to it and everything.
That's what happened in the 70s. Things were always heavy, man.
And but I'm always fascinated at the movies that someone goes back and grabs to do a remake.
Yeah.
And somehow no one's like latched onto this because I see it now.
You can see the update.
I could see an updated version of this, and if it's done correctly, like you don't even really have to, you know, I mean, the principles of, or the story can be the same, but I can see you freshen this up and grab, you know, just the hot guys that are around and the hot chick.
Yeah.
And you can make a ton of money.
It. Yeah, absolutely.
But to me, that one's still super funny. I get a kick out of
that. That's good. I don't know if you don't really got to call that one a guilty pleasure. I think that's just a straight up pleasure.
I mean, well, like when I say that, it's because I don't think most people are aware. Like to me,
It's not like a super popular movie.
And then like, you know, that's the movie where you're going to see Bill Cosby drinking beer, cussing, smoking.
Yeah.
You never see Bill Cosby do that.
Yeah. It's like,
he's gambling.
Is it the first one he does with Portier? Not a piece of the action. Uptown Saturday Night.
Yeah,
that's one where he's a womanizer and he's catcalling and stuff. Yeah. Like, who's this Bill Cosby? This is crazy, libido Bill Cosby.
And I tell people, look, you know Bill Cosby's done a ton of movies. He's not doing Bill in this movie.
He's not just Ghost Dad.
Yeah.
Ghost Dad, Jello Pudding. Yeah. For me, my default answer for favorite guilty movie, I'll give you three. I'll give you three, and they're all connected.
I'll give you my last one, Point Break.
Oh, hell yeah. Point Break, that's like the guilty pleasure for everyone. That's the guiltiest of pleasures.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I love that movie. My three, they're all connected. I'll give them to you in chronological order. Ernest goes to camp. Ernest saves Christmas. Ernest goes to jail. Those three movies. I love those three Ernest movies. And then Ernest Scared Stupid came along, and I was like, what the hell is this? The quality is dropping dramatically. And then he made like 8 or 9 of those things. He did Ernest Goes to College, Ernest Goes to Africa.
Space?
No.
They never got to space.
Right. Poor Jim Varney passed from lung cancer before they could send him up to space. He was only like 57, 58 when he died, so he could have still done some more Ernest stuff. Man, I love those. And Ernest Saves Christmas and came out in 88. That was the first big, quote, Hollywood production to be shot here in Central Florida.
Yeah.
Because that was when, someone here had the bright idea of turning this into Hollywood East, you know?
I remember that whole time when everyone was like, oh, we're going to get all these Hollywood movies.
Right. And then they don't provide the tax breaks. They don't provide all the incentives. So people didn't want to come down here. Right. Plus, Florida does have, it's a subtropic place. So the storyline has to fit in the subtropics.
What you're doing. Yeah.
You can't have a movie that takes place in Chicago and then shoot it in Lakeland.
Yeah.
That ain't happening.
No.
but Ernest Saves Christmas, though, is fun to watch because there's still some landmarks that are still around. What's the sub place? Gabriel's?
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll see that in the background because they shoot a bunch in College Park right there. The old Children's Museum is what they shot at. When they shoot out around the airport, you see how there's like nothing developed. It's all trees everywhere. Oh man,
that's awesome.
It's fun to watch that movie just for that alone. And then I'm an Ernest sucker for whatever reason.
Fast and the Furious, the first one.
Oh, that's super
guilty. I know that
pleasure.
Was a super huge successful movie,
but it's still a cheesy movie. Man.
You go back to it now. I find myself all the time just grabbing lines from that and saying it in real life. And
yeah.
I'm like, oh, I just showed my hand.
You're a fan. You added yourself as a fan. Have you seen the trailer for Fast and Furious 6?
Yeah. It's completely gone into cartoon world, and I'm fine with that.
Well, I'm fine with it too. I like that it's now turned into an action Ocean's 11 where Vin Diesel's like, here, we got the best team in the world.
And it's kind of like they've grabbed, now they're all apparently just on the verge of becoming James Bonds.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
All of a sudden, they're all like the superstars of some sort, super spies. I mean, and then what's funny is actually, if you go back and watch Fast and Furious 6, when the fifth one came out, I was like, this is a fun movie. The action's over the top. I'm really, it's stupid, but I'm enjoying it. I've rewatched it a few times on HBO just because it's on. It gets worse with every watch. More the plot holes come out, and then I see, like, there's one part. All right, you remember in the movie where they have to? All right, tangent. Remember, there's one part where they have to figure out a way to get into the police parking garage,
right,
and they've got to, like, drive around this hairpin turn, and they're avoiding these cameras, so they simulate it in their warehouse, and there's like a 20 minute sequence of them getting
everyone taking a turn.
It's a montage, like, these cars aren't fast enough. Well, Vinny's like, I know we can get some cars, and they go to an underground racing circuit, and there's a whole scene there. They show up with new cars and they try those. That doesn't work. 20 minutes spent on this. And then Tyrese, at one point, he goes, we need to get invisible cars. And Vin Diesel just goes, oh, we got that. And then they just steal a bunch of police cars. The simplest solution ever. Oh, yeah, we'll just steal police cars. And then they roll
and
right
in. And then they
in.
Have a drag race in front of the cop station.
And then they drag race in front of the cop station for police cars. Oh, my goodness. It's so stupid.
Not a good representation of Brazilian PD.
Not at all. It's over the top stupid. And then at the end, when they're doing a big driving scene with the safe and they're smashing police cars and everything, the girl who's, like, back at the warehouse talking to the mic, she's like, she makes the point to say, Mia. She goes, you even know the character's names.
I love her.
She goes, Jordana Brewster. She goes, you have every crooked cop in Brazil on your tail. First off, how does she know? She's sitting in a warehouse. A bunch of those cops just think that these guys stole something and they're causing damage. So those are some, not all those cops are crooked, but a bunch of them died. And, you know, it doesn't matter because we're supposed to think they're all crooked. It's such a ridiculous movie. And they shot 6 and 7 together, right?
Yeah.
6 has a huge ending where, like, one of the major characters.
So, I know it's killing you to.
I want to say it, man, because one of the big characters dies. I know which one does, and it's interesting too because I can't even want to say why it's interesting because they give it away, and they reveal at the end of 6 who the big mastermind villain is that they're gonna go after in 7, and that's the movie I want to see. I want to, just because of that reveal. I just want to get to the end of 6 and start showing 7 right away. Yep. I want to say, if you want to know these spoilers, go ahead and tweet me at I am Chris Crespo. I'll send you a direct message so it's not out there for everyone to see. I'll tell you what happens at the end of Fast and Furious 6. What were we talking about? Oh, favorite guilty pleasures. Then we started talking about Fast and Furious. Good stuff. All right. Well, Angel, I get a question. This is episode 13.
Right.
This is question 13 from friend of the show, Billy D. He's a friend of ours. He's up in Brooklyn. He's repping us up in New York City.
Right on.
And I've been asking for questions since the first day, and he's been given one every week, so it's pretty sweet. This week, Billy D is asking about our opinion of the Only God Forgives trailer. His exact wording, his email says, want to fight? How effing sweet does Only God Forgives look, Billy D? So you've seen the trailer.
I saw the trailer.
I watched this trailer ahead of time. What did you think? First off, if you're at home, if you're in your computer, if you're on your phone, go ahead and pause the show, pull up YouTube, watch the Red Band trailer for Only God Forgives. It's only a minute and a half, and then come back. We'll be here, right? So we'll go ahead. Go ahead. All right. And you're back. Okay. So Angel, they're back now. They've seen the Only God Forgives trailer. Let's talk about this baby from the makers of Drive. Nicholas Winding Refn.
And it's funny because I did not know that until you told me. And then once you told me that, it clicked.
It made sense?
Yes. Yeah. I was like, ah, yes.
It all makes sense.
So from what I saw and just the imagery and just the way that it was presented in the, you know, what you can get from a minute and a half trailer.
Right.
I'm in it.
Yeah,
I'm in.
I'm sold.
I want to see the thing.
They marketed this one really well so far. Yeah.
So
it looks like it's full of style and cool music.
And it looks
again.
It looks like there's some elements of like kung fu or martial arts.
Yeah, there's definitely an Asian influence. Yeah. A heavy Asian influence in this one.
Because it all takes place in Bangkok.
Yeah. So they're gonna run with that, which is great.
But I am in. Here's the thing. I like the fact that I like Ryan Gosling as a badass, as an action guy.
Yeah.
You know, like he can do all the girly movies that he wants, but
he looks like he's built for the girly stuff.
Right.
He doesn't look like he's built for the action stuff.
And he's the last few movies action. I mean, like I went and saw Gangster Squad. All right.
Yeah.
And
it's an okay movie.
It's okay, cheese and everything. But he pulled it off.
He's awesome.
He was awesome in that.
He's got a weird voice in it though. He's talking kind of high pitched. He's like, you got to die of something. It's a little weird. Yeah. Interesting choice.
I thought Drive was a fascinating movie. I totally dug it and everything.
Drew's a huge fan of that movie, too.
Yeah, so I am totally in, and I definitely want to see this one.
Yeah, I'm very excited for it. Nicholas Winding Refn, this guy is a great director. He is from Denmark, I believe. I think he's a Dane. He's from Scandinavia somewhere. One of those countries. One of those very, very white countries. And, man, the movies he made there, the Pusher trilogy, have you seen those? Those were on Netflix for a while.
Okay.
He made a trilogy. Well, first he made one movie, Pusher, which is just about a dude who's, you know, trying to get into the drug trade, and it's underground crime world. He just made a crime movie, but really, really well done, really intense. That's what broke him. That's what made him big on the international scene. He did Bronson with Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
That's an amazing
ridiculous movie.
And this one kind of looks more like Bronson than it does Drive. It looks a little more over the top and violent and crazy.
But here's the thing, and this is what I'm curious about, because from my impression, watching the preview,
mm-hmm.
I think there's a, just like there was in Drive, there's a stillness in some of the shots. There is, there's not a lot of dialogue for the sake of dialogue.
Right, yeah.
And it was very similar.
Kind of spare.
And, you know what I mean? And,
yeah.
And for some people, that was a reason enough for them not to be able to get into Drive.
True.
You know what I mean?
Very true.
And I hope...
people get used to that, maybe.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Because I dig that. Let what's going on in the scene speak for itself.
Right.
You know, we don't need to be, you know, spoken or...
Spoon-fed.
Spoon-fed or written out. Exactly. Okay, I am feeling this, and this is why... Show me.
Yeah.
Let me see you act a little bit.
Yeah, they call that the mise-en-scene. You know, the totality of everything. The way it's shot, the set dressing, the way the actors are just standing there, the music. You can let that tell the story without having to exposition the hell out of it, and people are just talking.
Yeah.
Big camera. Moves, yeah.
Well,
it's definitely a different style that should be more appreciated.
That stuff. That's one of those things, and I didn't realize that it bugged me as much. I'm trying to remember the movie that it did. But and everyone, think about it. You know a scene like this where because for whatever reason we are this generation that we are.
Yeah.
The characters are going to basically tell you exactly what they're about to do.
Yeah.
In the scene, and then they go do it,
and then they do it,
and then as I'm thinking, it's like that. 2 minutes of dialogue was absolutely not needed.
It's redundant.
You could have just done it.
Yeah, they do show and tell.
You just do.
Actually, you're just supposed to show, not tell. But they first we'll tell you, and then we're going to show you.
Yeah.
And then maybe we'll even recap later. We'll do some flashbacks to stuff that we've already seen just 5 minutes ago.
And then when I'm trying to explain it, I was like, look, there's a difference between foreshadowing.
Uh huh.
And a difference between what I just explained.
An exposition dump that tells you what's going to happen. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't need to be handheld through every single movie.
Right. But people, that's when you see something like that, that's when those are the same filmmakers that will show you a shot of the Eiffel Tower, and then on the screen they'll put in text, Paris, France, Europe. thank you. Really?
I
thought that was the Eiffel Tower in freaking North Dakota. No, thanks for clarifying, you know. Michael Bay movies that all the time, you know, it's like Qatar, the Middle East. thanks. That's what you think of your audience, that we're not going to know where Qatar is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's when a filmmaker is showing almost a level of contempt for their audience. And Nicholas Winding Refn, he's the opposite. He's showing respect. He's trusting your intelligence level to pick up on what's going on and to interpret things artistically and to get his intent and stuff. So, yeah,
I like that.
Definitely different ways to make a movie.
I definitely like that.
And these guys, Gosling and Refn, they're like the next Scorsese, De Niro, or, you know, Scorsese, DiCaprio, Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell, working together a lot. They want to work together forever. Gosling wants to work with Refn forever. That's how it really is.
Cool.
And they're trying to put together their own big budget remake of Logan's Run.
No shit.
Yeah, they want to remake Logan's Run together.
Oh, wow.
That would be their first, really mainstream, like, we're going for accessible on this one, you know. But still, these guys, you know, they're going to get a little weird with it.
Yeah.
So we'll see if that one can come together. So, yeah. All right, thank you. Billy D, thanks for the question, buddy. All right, so we're almost wrapping up things here. Angel, I got a thing that I do with guests every week. It's a little bit of a psychoanalysis,
a little bit of
Scientology for you. This is the lightning round. Lightning round with Angel Rivera. I'm going to ask you 10 questions.
Okay.
We're going to try to go through these pretty quickly and just, you know, first thing that pops into your head, boom. And you know what? I realize here that I erased my first question. I'm going to have to come up with a first question on the spot. Okay. So here we go. 10 questions. Just first thing that comes to your mind, and then people are going to learn a little bit about you. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
All right, number one. Do you like avocados?
Love him.
Number two, who is the greatest basketball player of all time?
Magic Johnson.
Number three, what is the name of Hulk Hogan's character in Rocky III?
Hulk Hogan.
Number four, what is your least favorite style of music? The lightning round.
Ah, man, I'd have to say bachata.
Bachata. Number five. My mom's going to get a kick out of that. Number five. What do you want on your pizza?
Meat. It doesn't matter. Sausage, pepperoni, hamburger. Meat.
Okay, meat. Number six. Most underrated musical artist today.
Most underrated musical artist today. Crap, man. Oh, that's a tough one.
That is a tough one. Is that your answer? That's a tough one?
Yeah. Hold on. Let me think.
Because I fully accept cop-out answers.
No. Most underrated musical artist today.
Yes.
And there's a ton of different people that I could give you.
Okay. You can give me a couple if you want.
Yeah, there's a ton of different answers. For example, there's a new kid out, Jake Bug. Amazing. But he's underrated just because he's new. I think he's going to be huge.
Okay, Jake Bug.
Yeah, you're going to recognize the song, Something Lightning, and it's currently the song that's playing in the Gatorade commercials that they talk about the University of Florida and everything.
Okay, yeah.
All right, that's... But in the UK, he's, like, huge right now.
Jake Bug.
All right. But like I said, he's only underrated because he's brand new.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But okay. There's that.
So people keep an eye out for Jake Bug.
Underrated, I would have to say... Cody Chestnut.
Cody Chestnut. That name sounds familiar.
Yeah, definitely underrated.
I think I've heard you talk about that. Yeah. Talk about him.
Underrated. I would have to go with... let me try to give you one more. I'm like right now, what's going on in my head? This is what's going on in Angel's brain right now.
Just a crush of names?
Yeah, it's exactly. And I'm like, I could give you like parts and pieces of two different artists' names, you know?
Like Pink Zeppelin.
Yeah, like... man... I want to say, like, I totally want to scream Noel
Gallagher?
No. Right now, it's going in my Noel Grohl.
Noel Grohl?
Yeah.
That sounds like a mix-up.
David Grohl, Noel Gallagher.
Noel Gallagher, yeah. All right, well, we'll stick with Jake Bug and Cody Chestnut.
Cody Chestnut.
Check out Jake Bug and Cody Chestnut, people. Number seven's a twofer. What was your favorite place you've ever lived and your least favorite place you've ever lived?
Favorite place, always has been New York.
Okay.
Lived in Park Slope and lived in Manhattan.
Nice.
Always, least favorite place is a small town called Blytheville, Arkansas.
Ooh. Oh.
Yeah. We lived there, and this is when I was Air Force brat days. Lived
yeah.
There. Actually, it's a tie between Blytheville, Arkansas, and Houston, Texas, because I lived in the suburbs of Houston called Pasadena, which was also nicknamed Stinky Dina, because there was a some chemical plant, and it always smelled like farts.
Oh, all man. Right,
so there was that part, and then Blytheville sucked because it was as big as a pinhole.
Oh, really? Yeah, just nothing horrible, little hole in the ground.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. But New York is the best, of course.
Yeah.
Park Slope, where in Manhattan?
Manhattan, it was 74th and Amsterdam.
74th and Amsterdam. So, you're still like a good 30 blocks south of Harlem.
Yeah.
Still so good. It was, it's almost upper East Side.
Kinda, it was right before it got hot and everyone was buying up the property and everything.
Yeah. So gentrification.
Oh, dude, it was horrible. All right, so I was living in this building. It was awesome in the sense I'm even living in Manhattan.
Yeah.
But I was subletting a room from an apartment that was being subletted.
Okay.
So to understand what's going on, the lady that owned the apartment, she was in a rent-controlled building.
All right.
So as long as she lived and was alive, her rent in that part of Manhattan downtown,
it's ridiculously cheap.
She's paying like $300-$400 a month.
That's crazy.
To live there.
That's crazy.
Rent control bill.
Yeah.
But then she's renting the rooms out to different people, right?
Yeah.
So my rent a month there, man, I'm trying to remember. Maybe it was like $250 or $300 a month to live there.
Wow.
But like I had to put a padlock on my bedroom door.
Oh, man. Like there was
a couple people there, you know? Yeah. But it was ridiculous. But yeah, I did that for 2 years.
But then again, that's not the type of place where you're not living there. That's, no, where you, that's where you sleep and that's where you put your stuff.
Exactly. And that was kind of like in my single days, like, you know, I would never, ever bring a chick back to the place because it was horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was.
It's like, let's go back to your place.
Yeah. I mean, and it wasn't like unlivable. It was just, you know, it's a old, it was an old place, old building. You know?
Yeah. Well, so, there are tons of places like that in New York City, too. So you'd be surprised. Chicks will still get down. Number eight. Angel, what the hell are you listening to?
Right. Oh, man, I should have brought my iPad. Oh, actually, you know what? I will tell you exactly what I'm listening to.
Yeah,
give me 2 seconds.
What is the what's the latest thing Angel is listening to these days? Mr. Music.
Yeah.
Señor Musical.
There's all right, so obviously Jake Bugg, definitely grab that.
Okay.
And then, come on, computer. Who else? I hate when I get hit up like this because I'm like...
That's part of the lightning round. It's the pressure. The pressure is on.
Brain froze.
The heat is on.
Okay.
The heat is on.
Let's see. Hold on. Give me 2 seconds. Oh, damn, computer. God! All right, there's a couple cool mashups out there, mixtapes. There's this one, this kid's named Adrian Champion. He did a Stars and Stripes, and basically he took the crazy hot hip-hop tracks, mashed them up with the Stripes.
Oh, okay.
It's a free download. Go on the internet, find it. The kid's name is Adrian Champion.
Okay.
He really, like, nailed it. Like, totally nailed it.
Very nice.
That's a really fun one to listen to. I'm a fan of some of that stuff when they mash it up
A good mashup is always fun. I really like Girl Talk, you know, because they just mashing up all the most popular stuff, rock and rap, and it's always a party,
right?
And it's a party in your brain.
And let me do this because it's easier for me to look at some of this stuff and I can tell you like the stuff that I've just bought.
Yeah. That's what I want to know. What are you listening to now?
Hold on a second.
What we got? Slowest lightning round ever.
I know, this is horrible. I'm so crushed right now. Why is it doing this to me?
Definitely not going to win on time.
No. Oh, here we go. Bam. All right. So albums that I've just purchased that are awesome, that are worth it.
Here we go.
Jake Bugg, Two Fingers.
Mm-hmm.
The Craig Charles, and this is like a cool compilation of old school soul and funk. It's the Craig Charles Funk and Soul Club.
Nice.
And what you're going to find on here is, for example, there is I Bet You Look Good on the Dance Floor is Arctic Monkeys, but it's done by Baby Charles, who's an R&B soul guy.
Okay.
So completely different take on the song.
That's awesome.
Get that. Neon Trees, I'm digging them.
Okay.
Big Boy's album, Kendrick Lamar's album.
Yeah, Kendrick, everyone's listening to that thing.
And let me give you an old school one. Here you go. The Charlatans UK, their Sympatico album.
Okay.
Those are all albums I've just recently bought.
Awesome. There you go.
Sorry about the delay.
No, that's great. Then we end up getting some great answers. It was worth it. All right, we've got 2 questions left. Number 9, who is the most influential person in your life?
My dad.
All right. And number 10, if you could have any car right now, what would it be?
See, it's going to be the whole same thing with the music.
No, but give me the first car that pops in your head.
Nissan GTR.
Nissan GTR. Any particular year?
The one that's out like right
the
now.
The brand new.
Like, let me show you the one that's on my Facebook page. Thanks to what's his name? I hope he hears this too, so it'll drive him crazy. Nick Sharaba.
Oh, Sharabs. The Sharabers.
Look at that thing right there.
Woo! Look at that.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah, that's a black beauty right there.
It's like it's going to turn into a transformer.
So if anyone out there got $65,000 that can spot me so I can buy this 2009 AMS Alpha GTR out of Jacksonville, Florida, I'll let you drive it from time to time.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
A close second would be, and gearheads are going to remember this, and if I get the years wrong, I'm sorry. I think it's a between 1991 and 1994, GMC made this sport utility vehicle called the Typhoon.
The Typhoon.
Yeah. And what was cool is that they had taken the engine out of the Grand National, and they had put it in a couple different things.
Mm-hmm.
So they put it in the Typhoon. Mm-hmm. They put it in a truck called the Cyclone.
Okay. Typhoons and Cyclones.
Yeah, to this day, I mean, even to this day, if you were to see a cherried out GMC Typhoon, 91, 92, they only did it for a year.
Yeah.
It looks amazing.
Really?
And you look at it and you're like, yeah, that's got the business.
Wow. From 91.
91,
so,
92.
So they're older cars now. A few years, those will be considered classics. 25 years.
Actually, they're highly collectible even as we speak.
Wow.
It's hard to find ones that haven't been just slaughtered.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, they're very, very cool. There's a couple in the state of Florida I've seen. And that's what that looks like. Look at that.
Oh yeah, it definitely looks 90s. Yeah. It definitely has a 90s look to it.
So those would be my one and two.
Oh, awesome.
There, and maybe a Bentley GT too.
Oh yeah. Bentley. Sure.
Yeah. You gotta stop me because I keep going.
All right, we'll take the top three. We'll take the top three right there. That's the lightning round with Angel, slowest lightning round ever, but some great answers. I think people learned a lot about you with that, buddy. We really did. So that brings us to the end of the show, the end of the Crespo Dome. So on the way out, Angel, I started doing this with Matt a couple weeks ago when he was on episode 11. You know the concept of the swag bag, right? When celebrities go to award shows, they go up to the hotel suite, the swag suite, and they get the swag bag with the iPad and
Dr. Dre headphones,
Dr. Dre, Beats by Dre, and the
Mac computer. Is that what I get?
You see those five bags right there, buddy? We got Crespo Disso swag bag, sir, and you get to choose one blindly. Pick one of those five bags and then pop it over to me. We're going to break it out, and we're going to tell the people what you're getting. Oh, he took the one in the middle. I like it. All right, so we're going to show people. Ooh, you picked a good bag, Angel. You picked a good bag. First off, you're getting the novelization of The Wolfman based on the original screenplay.
Awesome.
And we talked about that too. It's
exactly,
that's
talking
so
about
weird.
What we talked about today.
But there you go, novelization of The Wolfman, because they still do novelizations. This is a FLARP brand noise razor, is what they call it. It's a little noise maker.
I think I know who's going to enjoy this.
I think I know. Yeah, I think you might know someone's going to enjoy that. I also enjoy this. Here's a little bubbles. You can blow some bubbles. There you go.
I've got my whole collection of this. That is awesome, dude.
And we're getting you what we got here. This is Asquith and Somerset Olive Oil Moisturizing Soap. Oh, that smells good. That smells really good.
Oh, look at you. So you're making me smell all pretty.
Yeah, you get an old bottle of soap and do a Crespo Diesel sticker.
Oh, absolutely.
As well. So
I got to give you, actually, I want to, because I see the pictures you post.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm glad I got the sticker because I got a pretty cool.
You got some good places
there? Yeah.
Well, what I'll do is we're almost out of stickers, so we got to run a whole new batch, like another 150, 200 stickers. I'll give you a bunch of them, and then you can be indiscriminate with just slapping them on things and have fun with that.
Fair enough.
So there you go. That's your swag.
Thank you so much, man.
Thank you so much for coming out, man. I really, really appreciate it. And it's a lot of fun. We're recording SBK Live here, so I get to see you for that, and I get the front row seat. So much fun. The SRN Network, man.
Absolutely.
We're all a part of it now. We're in this together, brother.
Actually, we're building this. So everyone that's listening, if you dig dig Chris's show, dig our show, the way that this thing works and the way that we get to build this and continue to do this, please share all the information.
Absolutely.
See the tweets, the posts. You think a buddy of yours or a friend of yours that isn't listening to now, but you think they're going to get turned on by it, please share this and continue to make all of this grow.
Absolutely.
Because this is the only thing that's going to take down the evil empire.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, we are. It is us against the man.
It really is.
And someone had to say it. I'm glad you did, Angel. I'm glad you did. So, yes, please, get us. You can check out Cinema Crespo Disso on iTunes. Make sure you rate us, review us, subscribe to us. I know SBK Live, the new SBK Live, will be on iTunes shortly.
Real soon.
So go ahead and feel free to search right now. It might be up there by the time you hear this episode. If not, you can go to sbklive.com and you can download the shows from there. Go to chriscrespo.com. That's where all my stuff is at. And that was episode 13. On behalf of Juicer Cogburn, I am Chris Crespo. Angel, thank you again.
Absolutely.
And tune in.
Look forward to doing this again.
Yes, we're definitely going to do it again. So tune in next week for episode 14. And we're also going to do a Florida Film Festival bonus episode. Keep an eye out for that. And we'll see you soon. Thanks a lot, guys.
Later.
Can I beatbox aside and up?
Yeah. Crespo Disso. It's the cinema of the Crespo Disso. It's the cinema. I'm Chris Crespo. What?
What?
And we're out.
Okay.